Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to welcome Deanne Turner to the show today. Deanne is a former executive at Chick-fil-A and now works globally as an author, speaker, and coach. Well, Deanne, I am so delighted that you are here. Thank you so much for making the time, and welcome to the Lou.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It is great to be with you, and it's a pleasure to be in St. Louis again.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation. And we just talked about we may have to do part one and part two, because I think there's a lot that we need to talk about. But tell me a little bit about how you grew up.
I'm a native Atlantan, which is rare, and spent all of my life there except for a little time in Cincinnati and a short stint in executive education in Boston. Since I was there for 9 weeks, I sometimes claim that I lived there.
Sure. But
anyway, the funniest thing about my childhood, when I think about talking with you and owning your own business, and my own entrepreneurial roots started early in my childhood. When I was about 8 years old, my father's best friend owned a grocery store. And so I came to realize that my house was on the path to the neighborhood swimming pool. And everyone had to go by my house on their way to the swimming pool. So I bought candy and drinks wholesale from him, set up, had a little table, and I had the merchandise all displayed. And so I would sell it at retail price, and the kids from the neighborhood would pass by my house, go under the deck, buy candy for me. I'd make a profit, and I'd go back to him and buy some more for the next week.
That's so awesome.
That was my first job and how my own entrepreneurial roots started. But, you know, along the way, too, I found that what I really wanted to do was be a writer. And so that was a big part of my childhood, too. Other than that, it was pretty normal. Grew up in a family, had an older brother, and my dad was an attorney. He passed away a few years back. My mother was a stay-at-home mom and did a beautiful job at that. And so pretty average along
the
way.
Pretty average, yeah. Your dad was obviously in the business world, so you probably got some of that education at dinner.
You know, it's funny that you mention that because, first of all, my dad, being honest with you, my dad was a lawyer, so he wasn't at a lot of family dinners. He worked long hours, and it was one of the reasons I didn't want to be one is because I watched him do those all those years. And so family dinners sometimes weren't till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And the other part that's interesting about that, when you think about it, Dad was in the business world, and he was in commercial real estate and corporate law, but he still was what we call a professional. And so I didn't have any true business mentors growing up, which made it interesting that I ended up in business. And I never really considered a career in that direction because it wasn't, even my mother went to law school. She ended up not practicing, but my influences were more, you know, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and professionals, not so many business people.
Right. But you did have that entrepreneurial bent.
Right.
and that bent to sell.
And I didn't understand
you saw the opportunity, right.
Well, it's funny. When I was selecting franchisees for Chick-fil-A restaurants, one of the questions I always asked them was, what was the first thing you ever sold? And the reason I asked them that question is if they told me a story like my own story, or like Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, his story of selling Coca-Colas when he was 5 years old, door-to-door, or newspaper outs. But if they told me, oh, I sold T-shirts for my fraternity in college, I knew right then I might not have an entrepreneur. Because right. entrepreneurs, I've even seen this among my own three children. One of them, definitely an entrepreneur, he was figuring out how to make money by providing a service or a product from a very young age. And mm-hmm. that's usually a trait of an entrepreneur.
Right. That's interesting. Wow. Well, fast forward a little bit. Now, you did get a degree in journalism, did you?
I didn't finish my degree in journalism. Actually, my husband and I got married and moved back to Atlanta. He was finished with school.
Okay.
And I was headed to finish my degree in journalism when I had a little bit of a detour.
Right. You had a little bit of a detour. And to borrow a line from your book, Deanne, it all started with a flat tire.
Well, it did. Well, when we moved back to Atlanta, I went to work for an advertising firm because that's what journalism majors do to make money, especially back in those days. And so I worked there a brief time. My husband was a pastor at a church in Atlanta, and down the street was the Chick-fil-A headquarters. And it became necessary for me to move closer to where the church was so we could be living in the community where we were serving. He said, I really think you ought to apply at Chick-fil-A. And you know, it's funny, I grew up in Atlanta, ate Chick-fil-A from the time I was a little girl.
Sure.
Actually ate it on my wedding day, and my husband and I had it on our first date. But I never really thought about going and working at the corporate office. So I started researching a little bit, and I really didn't think much about it. I just put in an application. Well, 2 weeks later, they sent me that letter that says, thank you for your interest, but we don't have anything that matches your experience and skills. And I told my husband, I said, well, that's that. So let's just not worry about it. I'm not going And he said, oh, no, why don't you apply again? So I applied again. And 2 weeks later, I got another version of that same letter. Then I was intrigued. I was like, who is this place that keeps turning me down, you know? And so I started pursuing it, and I started learning more about Chick-fil-A, and I was pretty sure I wanted to be part of it. Well, about 6 months into this, a lady comes into the church one day where my husband was a pastor, and she's had a flat tire, and she wants to use the phone, because you remember this was way before cell phones.
Oh, right.
And she wants to use the phone, and he said, that's okay, I'll change the tire for you. And so he changed the tire, and afterwards she gave him a coupon for a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. He said, oh, do you work for Chick-fil-A? And she said, well, I do, but my husband's being transferred to Jackson, Mississippi, and so I've resigned. And he said, what department do you work in? And she said, advertising, which was exactly the place I'd been trying to get a role. So he ushered her out of the church, went over and called me. I hung up the phone with him, immediately called Chick-fil-A. And then I told that lady that I'd been talking to for 6 months. Her name was Gail. And I said, Gail, I hear you have a job in advertising, and I'd like to interview for it. I'm convinced they just wanted this woman to stop calling them and pestering them for an interview. This was also before email, so everything was a phone call.
Right.
Anyway, they invited me in for an interview, and I went through the process for about 4 months.
4 months, I know, you said. It was a long interview process.
But I did eventually, as you know, I was able to get the job and accept the offer, and I always say that my husband changed my life when he changed a tire.
Yeah, I love that story. That is a great story. Well, you talk about being mentored by Truett Cathy. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure. Well, you know, Truett was an amazing man for somebody who grew up in the first housing project in Atlanta. His mother ran a boarding house, and he was one of the younger of his large family. And so, you know, he was the last to eat the chicken when it came around on Sunday. Uh-huh. He used to say he didn't get the wings. He got the chicken feet. But anyway, just such a humble man from humble beginnings. And then to build what he built at Chick-fil-A. And when I say I was mentored by him, many, many, many people were mentored by Truett because he gave himself away.
He
loved people and he gave himself away. He always said, you know, we're not in the restaurant business, we're in the people business. And what he taught me was people decisions are the very most important decisions a leader makes. Those decisions are, you know, who you select, how they get promoted, how they're compensated, even how they exit the organization. All of those are the most important decisions that a leader makes. And among those, the selection decision is most important.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he and I spent the most time talking mm-hmm. about, was getting that people decision right. Because if you selected the right person, it solved a lot of problems.
Right.
In fact, this is the most amazing thing. You're in the staffing business.
I think
you'll find this amazing. You'll never guess what I had a zero budget for when I went to work for Chick-fil-A. Separation. I had no budget for separation. I had a great budget for selection. I had a healthy budget for stewarding and sustaining talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no budget for separation. So I went to talk to the president, Jimmy Collins. He was actually the executive vice president at the time. And I said, Jimmy, why is it that there's no line item for this? He said, well, I have a story for you. He said, when I came to work for Truett, I set up this plan of what we would do if we needed to terminate somebody. And he said, as I brought the plan to Truett and started to hand it across the desk, he put his hand up and he said, that won't be necessary. We won't be making any changes. And so Truett's philosophy was that if you selected
the right person,
the right talent to begin with, that you won't have to deal with that mm-hmm. issue of separation. So he didn't make a budget for it, which caused us to be much more careful about our selections.
Sure, absolutely. You've just set up the perfect segue because you say building culture is really about timeless principles. And timeless principles are best conveyed and taught through stories. Do you have like a story that just comes to the top of mind, Deanne, that just really still stands out for you about your time there?
Yeah, I could tell you hundreds.
Probably hundreds of stories.
So I'm going to tell you about my favorite selection of a franchisee ever. It was 1994. That's how long ago it was. And at that time, my responsibility was for operator or franchisee selection for the company. That's where I was in my career. Again, I told you that Truett said people decisions are the most important decisions right. we make. Well, the most important of those was who we gave the keys to the restaurant to. If you pick the right leader, it solved a lot of problems. We had this location. In fact, it was the lowest volume restaurant in our chain. We were struggling to find an operator for it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, my performance was based on having leaders in restaurants, not having them without an operator. So this was quite a problem that I had to solve. And we looked through our system and we didn't have any candidates because not many people wanted the lowest volume. But we had this guy who'd been trying to become an operator for a long time, 10 years in fact. I said, well, let's just bring, his name's Rudy. Let's just bring Rudy in. Let's just see what happens. So he starts the process and he makes it to the end of the process. And he's sitting in my office. I interview him. And then after 2 hours of interviewing, I offer him the opportunity. Well, Rudy begins to cry. And tears are in his eyes. And he turns to his wife and translates in Spanish. She had come with him and she didn't speak any English. And he translates. And then she begins to cry. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, great. Oh. This guy's waited 10 years for his opportunity. He's just been offered the lowest volume restaurant in our chain, and he's disappointed. But that wasn't the case at all. It was tears of joy that he had an opportunity. And did Rudy make the most of his opportunity?
I bet he did.
Let me tell you what he did. The first year he was in the restaurant, he increased sales exponentially in this restaurant. Profits exponentially. He won the highest sales award that are provided to Chick-fil-A operators, but he wasn't done yet. The next year, he repeated the performance and won the award again. He did so well that the third year, we moved Rudy to a new restaurant, but he had made that restaurant so successful that we were able to attract a retiring Air Force officer to take over that restaurant. And today, Rudy operates two freestanding Chick-fil-A restaurants in McAllen, Texas, where he first started out. And the guy who took his place, Bruce, he operates two freestanding restaurants in Arizona. So the lesson of all that is because somebody was willing to take an opportunity that nobody else wanted. Thousands of people have had jobs out of those two men in those 20-plus years.
Oh, my goodness.
And scholarships awarded and all kinds of opportunities. And have had people from their restaurants to become franchisees as well.
Sure. What a fantastic story. I love that, Deanne, and I'm looking forward to hearing more. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Deanne Turner. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Deanne, you say the combination of extraordinary talent and a remarkable culture will win the hearts of your clients. So I would say Chick-fil-A probably has one of the most intentional, remarkable cultures in American business today. How has that been built? And then I want to talk about the talent piece.
Let me talk to you a little bit about my formula that I talk about in my new book, Better Talent.
Okay, perfect.
So first of all, let's talk about what is a remarkable culture. I think it has three elements. The first is a meaningful purpose. It's the why an organization exists at all. Mm-hmm. That can be a business. It can be an educational institution. It can even be a family. Why are we here? What is this all about for us? Secondly, the second element is a challenging mission. What are we trying to accomplish? Now, the purpose rarely ever changes, but the mission, once it's accomplished, you have to set a new challenging mission. So, mm-hmm. second element. The third is demonstrated core values. What are the beliefs that this organization holds most dear and is willing to demonstrate day in and day out? The demonstration part of that's the most important thing, because some people create a list of core values, they stick them on a wall, but they don't demonstrate them. And it's really important from leadership down to demonstrate those. So that's the essence of remarkable culture. Mm-hmm. The second element that I talk about in this formula is extraordinary talent. And what do I mean by that? Well, I'm talking about talent whose character matches the culture of the organization and whose competency matches the role, and not just the role that they're applying for, but probably roles in the future, because mm-hmm. that's where you need your bench strength for leadership. And lastly, chemistry that matches the team. So when you put those together and then you teach them principles mm-hmm. that can be applied rather than forcing them to comply to a stack of rules, you give them principles that they can use their judgment and apply, then they create amazing customer experiences. And here's the last part of the formula. When that's done over time consistently, then what you end up with is legendary customer service, like you have at Chick-fil-A or like you have at Ritz-Carlton. That's that formula that I believe in.
And I know that you've talked about situations where the principles are not taught, and so that the employees don't own that, and they don't always do what's in the best interest of
sure.
the customer.
Yeah.
But with Chick-fil-A, if your order's wrong, you get a free chicken sandwich.
Well, I can't right? commit to that, but it certainly happens often.
Yes, right.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I think that's the whole difference is this idea of rules versus principles.
Right.
Now, you and I experience this all the time at customers at all kinds of brands. I could tell you stories just this week of where I can walk into a hotel or a restaurant or a retail establishment, and within seconds of engaging with one of the team members, I know whether it's a remarkable culture or a toxic culture or maybe something in between. And I know it depending on if the team member responds to me as somebody who's been taught principles to apply versus they've got a bunch of rules they have to follow and they're sticking to the rules.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So you can really tell that that's, to me, the hallmark of what kind of culture you're in immediately.
Sure. Well, can you talk about the keys to talent from Bet on Talent? What are those keys to talent?
Sure. Well, we talked about remarkable culture. The next thing you want to do is focus on the selection, the stewardship, and sustaining. I use the word sustaining talent rather than retaining. Mm-hmm. Retaining just feels like keeping something around.
Sure.
But sustaining is not just keeping it around, but actually growing and developing that talent
as
well.
And keeping them engaged, right?
Exactly. Very engaged. So, and then, you know, nurturing the internal relationships and focusing on mentoring and leadership development, creating loyalty among team members to the organization and to each other.
To each other.
Because
right.
loyalty often breeds loyalty. And so I believe that loyal employees create loyal customers.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about brands who are really successful, what I see in those brands are servant leaders, and they practice servant leadership, that they put others before themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's one of the major examples that I had at Chick-fil-A from
right.
Truett Cathy.
Right.
But I see so many other brands that have bought into that and recognize that it's not a top-down organization, that the people who are closest to the customer are truly the most valuable
mm-hmm.
and need to be supported. And then, you know, one of the things that I love about being associated with Chick-fil-A is that their hospitality policy is to treat everyone with honor, dignity, and respect. And every brand could adopt that for their employees
Absolutely.
And then also for their customers. And that's one of the things I experienced. I've been retired from Chick-fil-A for a year now, and I travel around the country a good deal speaking. And when I'm in Chick-fil-A restaurants now, just as a customer and just observing, I actually look for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never, ever not felt it, or have I ever seen an example where it wasn't happening
right.
in the restaurant. So that's one of the things I love about Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something extra that you have seen in one of your team members.
This question just reminds me of a team member that I had that just displayed resilience. I call it in my own life finding a way forward. When I hit a wall, it's like, okay, I have to find a way forward. And I saw this in this team member, and I'll tell you the story of what happened. I placed her in this role, and she was doing a phenomenal job, but she got caught up a little bit in a political situation, as often happens. And she received some really unfounded criticism, and I knew it was unfounded. You know, sometimes, yes, there's the feedback you need, but this case truly was unfounded. So what I decided to do at that point was to remove her out of that situation to a different role. Now, a lot of people would have been so discouraged. I mean, you know, they've been moved out of their role. They've been criticized unfairly. And they've been criticized unfairly by a senior leader in the organization. So I really thought she was going to leave the company. Nothing like it. She just did an about face. She took the role I asked her to. She ran with it. Her people, which I knew they would, they absolutely loved her. Her influence in the organization increased tenfold. Today, she's a director, and she's leading an area of the business and doing a fantastic job. And I'm so proud of her. So many people would have been defeated by that, but instead she had resilience, gave it something extra, and moved forward with it.
I love that. That is a great story. I know that you talk a lot about positional authority versus personal influence. And there's a big difference, isn't there? I mean, it sounds like she still had personal influence because her team still loved her and followed her. And
absolutely, yes. Positional authority won't get you very far.
Right.
It's personal influence that'll make the difference in whether or not people follow you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, tell us a story about where you saw something missing, possibly in you or a team member.
Well, it was hard for me to think about this question, really, in light of Chick-fil-A. So just in general, as a consumer, the thing that I see so often where I see a brand failing is not to provide second mile service for the customer, the guest, the patient, the student, whatever, whoever's receiving their services. It's, of course, a principle that I learned at Chick-fil-A and make second mile second nature. And I'm so disappointed when I go into a business. In fact, you know, my mother, I wrote a blog post about this recently. My mother went into a store. She was really excited about coming to our community, and she'd been a member of that store at a different community, and she'd moved, and she's so excited they were coming. And then she told me the story about how she was treated on her first visit there, and it was horrible, and it was all about people just not willing to do that extra little thing to make somebody's visit really extraordinary.
I'm thinking dignity, honor, and respect.
And that's what happened to her that day. She had none of that.
Well, what do you believe, Deanne, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Every leader always needs extra insight. So don't ever stop asking for it and being willing to hear it and act upon it. I don't care how many years we've been leading people. Even today, I have so much more insight looking back. And I know 10 years from now, if I'm around, I'll have more insight. So be willing to receive that insight from others.
So did you guys do formal reviews at Chick-fil-A?
Oh, certainly. We had a performance management system. We had one of the things that I felt like they did best was the leadership talent review, where once a year, top to bottom of the organization, leadership was reviewed and plans were made for succession and development opportunities came from that. But I'm not even talking about the formal, all of the formal feedback. I'm really talking about the willingness to have those over a cup of coffee
conversations,
because that's, to me, that's where the value comes. I think it's where people are most vulnerable to receive it and most vulnerable to give it.
Right. I completely agree. I always say we all have blind spots. All of us have development opportunities. And so getting that feedback from others is really critical to your own growth. So, Deanne, I know you retired from Chick-fil-A a year ago after, what, 33 years?
That's right.
Being in the organization. And I know for you, you say really what you did then at Chick-fil-A and what you're doing now is that you really want to help people find their path. Talk a little bit about what you're doing now and how you're continuing that mantra that you have for your life of helping other people find their path.
You know, my number one priority is I'm a writer. That's driven by the contracts I'm under with Baker Publishing. But that's okay because, you know, that was what I always wanted to be.
Right. You said that.
The reason I moved away from that is when I was in college, I realized that my husband and I got married, it was really hard to make a living as a journalist, and I didn't have enough life experience that anybody would want to read about.
Right.
And so that's how I chose to go into advertising, was so that I could make a living. And then I ended up in HR. I didn't tell you the story about how that happened.
Yes.
But I was in my final interview after months of interviewing for this job in advertising, and the vice president of human resources did something I would never do, but he said to me, he said, they're going to offer you this job in advertising, but you know, I have a job in HR you might be interested in too. I think you'd be a really good match for it. Are you interested? He said, go home and think about it over the weekend. So I did. And I said, you know, I think it might be really interesting to work in HR for a couple of years. I like those people. Well, of course you like the people in HR. They're paid to be nice, right? So I like those people. I think I'd like to work with them. And I'll know where the jobs are in marketing, and I'll move on in a couple of years to marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that never happened, obviously, right. Because I really found my own calling. But I didn't do it without a struggle. I told you that my husband was a pastor. I thought I was going to be in full-time Christian ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why I went to school where I did, Cincinnati Christian University in Cincinnati, is because I wanted to go into full-time Christian journalism. And so I was going to be the pastor's wife and stay home with the children. This unexpected career happened for me, and things started moving along, and it was going really well. And I was struggling with the idea that maybe I'd abandoned my original calling that God had given me.
Mm.
And soon I realized that my calling was to help other people discover their calling. And that became really the focus of my role all those years. I had lots of responsibilities at Chick-fil-A. I mean, everything from building and overseeing the on-site childcare and wellness and talent acquisition and talent development. We could get culture and engagement, diversity, mm-hmm. inclusion, all of those things. But when it really came down to the one thing I did, my job was to help other people find their calling. So I was given an amazing opportunity about 14 months ago. Chick-fil-A offered 100 employees the opportunity for an early retirement. I didn't have to go. No one had to go. About half of them chose to. But I really saw that as my opportunity to do those things I'd already dreamed of. I already had a contract for 2 books with Baker Books. I had already been speaking about 50 times a year. And I thought, you know, I love doing that. I'd like to continue. And it also gave me the opportunity full-time to focus on my true life's passion, helping other people find their path.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm doing these days. I have to admit, the top of the line priorities is writing. And then secondly is speaking, because all those people want to know about Bet on Talent. I have to get out there and speak. And I love doing that. I especially love meeting the people in all the different places. And then I do some consulting. I don't do a lot of consulting, to be honest. I'm working with global partners. I primarily work with CEOs and chief human resource officers on helping them strengthen their culture, or maybe mm-hmm. even lay the foundation for an organizational culture, and then helping them look at their talent systems. Lastly, I love coaching. And again, both of those things I don't do as much of right now as mm-hmm. I want to, given my other commitments. But it keeps me fresh. It gives me good material to share with others, and I've really enjoyed those opportunities as they've come about.
So Bet on Talent is your newest book, right, Deanne?
Yes.
So I know it's on Amazon, but you've got a website as
Absolutely.
Well. What is your website?
My website is deanneturner.com. That's DEANN Turner.com. You can find my book there, along with lots of other free content. Have a blog post there. There's some videos there. And so I invite you to engage with me there. You can also find me on my Facebook page. It's Deanne Turner author page. I hang out mostly in LinkedIn. There's a lot of good content that I learn from on LinkedIn.
For sure.
So, of course, I'm at Deanne Turner there, on Instagram at Deanne Turner, and then on Twitter at Deanne Turner.
Well, I hope that our audience will engage with you on any of those platforms, Deanne, and just thank you so much for being here. And everybody go out and buy a copy of Bet on Talent.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.